Northern California Edison versus District Court. Are we ready to proceed? All right, would you like to reserve a little bit of time?
I would. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes if I may.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Charles Reed and I represent the petitioner, Southern California Edison. In this situation, the Department of Taxation is trying to deprive everyone who has paid taxes in Nevada and whose refund claim has been denied by the Tax Commission access to the independent judgment of the courts in the form of a right to trial de novo. This is a right that the legislature has provided since 1955. It's a right that the department has acknowledged without challenge until just last year. It's a right that a department lawyer acknowledged to this taxpayer during the administrative proceedings for this claim. And it's a right that's been recognized in two decisions of this court tied to language in the statute that has never been amended by the legislature. Although there are a number of similarly worded statutes describing the judicial remedy for a taxpayer seeking a refund, this case concerns the claim for refund of sales or use tax. The applicable standard statute is NRS 372-680. What does it say? The taxpayer must file within 90 days of a final tax commission decision or he's waived his claim. He files an action in the district court against the department. It must be based on the same grounds as the claim before the tax commission.
Why can't a petition for judicial review be considered an action?
A petition for judicial review can be considered an action, but the point is that the judicial remedy that we are describing here and provided for in 372-680 is a specific action that is identified in that statute, and it has particular requirements. And they are very different from a petition for judicial review. This court has recognized that very clearly in its Obexer and its Safeway decisions.
Counsel, as to those two decisions, since there's been some amendments and they're not directly on point, even though they do give us some insight. Are we barred from trying to harmonize 372 and 233B in terms of standard of review?
There is no need to harmonize these two statutes because they are not in conflict, Your Honor. The judicial remedy that is provided.
Counsel, just for argument's sake and from the bench, I don't think we'd be here if it was so clear. We do have a problem. 233B indicates decisions of government agencies have judicial review, where 372 talks about a trial de novo. We have an action by a government agency that wasn't exempted out of 233B, but yet we have this specific statute. So should we not seek, and I understand your position, we don't, but from the devil's advocate standpoint, how do we deal with these two, where one says anyone who's not exempt falls under 233B?
I think the answer to that question is that if you are a taxpayer who is seeking a refund, you have a statutory judicial remedy specified, in this case 372-680. If you are a taxpayer who is dealing, for example, with a deficiency assessment against you, or you have lost in your arguments against the deficiency in the tax commission, you have explicitly a judicial remedy provided in 233B, and that is you're permitted to file a petition for judicial review. And I think the reason that there's a distinction here, a difference, a different track, if you will, between these two, is that the action that is provided for to the in in 680 is in the nature of an action for restitution. And the court made this very clear in Obexer and in Saveway, where it distinguished the APA, which is merely dealing with a review of an agency decision.
But the APA that you were just talking about distinguished came in after these two cases, the amendment.
Well, the APA, in broad terms, of course, has been part of Nevada law.
But specific terms, the 91 and the subsequent amendments thereafter.
Let's take a look at the language that the department relies so very heavily on is the change in 1989 to 233B. And keep in mind, it's a change to 233B. It's not a change to 680. And it states that the exclusive means of judicial review or judicial action concerning a final decision in a contested case involving an agency to which this chapter applies. The 233B is the exclusive means of review. Okay? Now, take a look at why that is not applicable to 680. The action that's provided in 372.680 is certainly not judicial review. It's described clearly, and I don't think there's any dispute about that. Is it a judicial action concerning a final decision? And I emphasize those words. It is, of course, a judicial action. Yes, the same word action appears in the statute 680. But does it concern the final decision? No, it does not. What does it concern? It concerns the taxpayers' equitable action for restitution of money held by the department wrongly in the opinion of the taxpayer. It is an equitable action, a classic equitable action for trial before a district judge. Judges trying these matters all the time. It involves, you know, the broad questions of whether the department is wrongly holding the taxpayers' money. That's the language that this court used to describe the taxpayers' remedy in Saveway. And it is just as valid because
this court also said something interesting in Saveway in footnote 4. Does the observation in footnote 4 that the tax commission is not a party to the subsequent claim for restitution at that time change the analysis today?
I do not see any basis for it to change the analysis. What happened in the subsequent amendment was that the tax commission was required to issue the final determination before a judicial remedy could apply. But that is all a matter of the structure of the administrative process before the taxpayer is entitled to move to a judicial remedy. And that judicial remedy remains described by 372.680, a direct action against the department, et cetera. And I do not see that the fact that the legislature may have changed the provisions of the administrative process prior to the judicial remedy cannot affect the scope and nature of the judicial remedy unless there is an explicit determination by the legislature that that's what they wish to do. But I want to defer a couple of moments, since I'm trying to parse my time closely, reserving some time for reply after the department's lawyer, also to introduce amicus counsel. Your honors have graciously allowed a few moments for her to address the court, and I would like to do that right now.
Well, when you come back, if you wouldn't mind, I would be interested in hearing why you think there is a better policy served by de novo review of an independent judicial officer in restitution claims.
Certainly. Absolutely, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Debbie Leonard and McDonald Crono Wilson on behalf of the AMICI, Nevada Taxpayers Association, Nevada Manufacturers Association, and the Council on State Taxation. I appreciate the court's indulgence in allowing me to make a few points on behalf of these AMICI and on behalf of all taxpayers, and this includes present taxpayers, future taxpayers, Nevada companies, companies that do business in Nevada, companies that want to do business in the future in Nevada. As the court knows, an important value of the law is to promote consistency and prevent arbitrary government action. And the facts of this case underscore how important that value is. Here we have a situation where the Department of Taxation has changed the rules mid-game. For years, and even with regard to Edison, the department took the position that 680 gave taxpayers the right to bring a civil action against the department with trial de novo, where a refund of a sales and use tax was sought. This is a valuable right. It includes the right to review by an independent body. It includes, and that independent body is not the one that's holding possession of the money that the taxpayer seeks to get a refund of. It also, the valuable right includes the additional fact-finding that a trial de novo would provide. And also, it's a situation where there wouldn't be deference to the agency, and that's an important distinction with regard to, Your Honor, what you just mentioned in terms of a better policy is to allow that independent body to look at whether it's right for the state to continue holding the money that the taxpayer believes should be refunded. And only recently, with the state facing some new fiscal constraints, does the department now take the opposite position that it's taken historically.
I'm sorry, I don't really think you answered my question. How does not showing deference to the agency as a competing policy consideration, how is that overcome by having an independent review by a judicial officer? We frequently defer to agencies on all kinds of technical matters, public utilities, I mean, the list is endless. Right. Why not do so in this case?
Well, Your Honor, I think the important thing is going back to the statutory language, and in this case, it provides for an action that's not it's an action against the department. It is not a petition for judicial review in which the commission is named as a respondent.
But the language doesn't say that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The language doesn't say that. The language says an action.
Right.
And I had posed a question earlier, why is not a judicial review an action?
Well, and I would agree with Mr. Reed that judicial review is an action, but again, as I'm trying to emphasize, the rights that if you construe an action more broadly, rather than limit it where the legislature hasn't limited it to judicial review, those rights that are conferred on a taxpayer are important rights that the legislature has granted. The legislature has known in the interim that about the APA and still has not repealed the broader language that exists in
nor did they exempt in this case from 233B, where they granted other exemptions specifically.
Right. And I think that what you've just described requires you to really focus on the importance of the rules of statutory construction, where you have to look to this statute first. And in order to interpret this language, you can't first look outside to other language that's not even included in the statute. You have to look to the language of this statute to determine on its face, is it clear? Is on its face, is the language action actually limited? And I think the answer is that it's not.
And the gravamen of the problem is what review is to be given in that action by the district court judge, substantial evidence or de novo, and on that point the statute's silent.
And I think that where it says an action, it's not within the court's prerogative to limit it in that manner to where it would deferential standard of review, because the legislature has provided for a civil action by a taxpayer seeking a refund. And I just want to make sure that I am not using up the time of Mr. Reed.
Counsel asked that review, is there any issue as to what has been known in the past as any estoppel as to issues, since you have a final determination from below as to this, what you're calling a de novo hearing. Aren't issues settled when it comes up?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I can't hear you very well.
Don't we have an issue as to estoppel as to those matters that have been litigated between the parties previously in that administrative review?
I believe that Mr. Reed will want to address that particular issue of estoppel, but I think just to I want to finish up with one important point about due process, and that is that the agency has changed the way it's doing things, and I feel like if that is for all Nevada taxpayers, if the agency is going to do that, it has to provide some kind of notice and due process to Nevada taxpayers. And I thank you for your time.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Gina Session. I'm Chief Deputy Attorney General representing the Department of Taxation.
Ms. Session, has the Tax Commission changed its position in this case as to which statute governs? It certainly looks like it from the record.
Certainly there's been a change in the law. In 1999, there was a change in the statute.
That's not my question, and you know what I'm asking. Have you changed your position as to which statute governs as it relates to this taxpayer and taxpayers in general from 372.680 to now 233B? Looks like you have.
Well, I believe that would depend on which attorney you would be addressing that question to. I think the different attorneys representing the Department of Taxation have had confusion on this issue, and I think there's been confusion with practitioners, and I think there's some cases that have been before this court, some that have come up on petitions for judicial review, some of them have come up on more of a summary judgment civil action.
Ms. Session, then what is the department's policy today, and what is the public policy behind that?
Today, we are looking for a uniform policy to apply to all taxpayers. And that's why in all of our cases today, we're going forward and challenging any cases that are brought forward as a civil trial de novo if there's been a final decision by the Tax Commission.
Is there a public policy that you would put forth, as Justice Hardesty has asked the other way, as to why we should accept this 233B opposed to 372.680?
Absolutely. There's a public policy of uniform treatment of taxpayers. Southern California Edison has talked about deficiency taxpayers, but when deficiency taxpayers go to district court, they have to pay under protest. So there's no difference between a deficiency taxpayer and a taxpayer looking for a refund. And there's no policy reason why you would give one. It's undisputed that the deficiency taxpayer has to is a standard of judicial review when they're in district court. And why would you treat that taxpayer who has to pay under protest and who is looking for a refund of taxes that he says are unlawfully paid any differently? Why would you give the sales and use tax taxpayer looking for a refund a trial de novo when there's no distinction? They're both taxpayers looking for a refund of taxes paid. And it's the same with the property taxpayer. They have to pay under protest before they can go to district court, and they're limited to a petition for judicial review. So there, all of the papers, I've not seen any policy why this discrete set of taxpayers should be permitted to have a trial de novo while those other taxpayers are limited to petitions for judicial review.
Well, that's an interesting argument. We would think the legislature would make those policy choices. And if the policy choice is to recognize there's no distinction between the deficiency taxpayer and the refund taxpayer, they would have rescinded 680 by now.
Well, and
why is it still on the books?
Other than
to create confusion for the tax commission's lawyers about what advice to give.
I think that's exactly what they were attempting to do in 1999 when they made the change to 372.680, was to bring it in line with the other tax statutes. So that's
the commission's change in policy with respect to refund review date back to 1999, or is it of more recent vintage?
Well, it's something that the tax department has never brought before this court or brought before any court to determine what the appropriate review is.
So if the 1999 amendment brought about such a profound change in policy, that was lost on the commission until 2010?
I think the commission was reacting to the lawsuits that were filed. And when they were filed as petitions for judicial review, which in particular case, I'd like to make note of Nevada Cement, and I apologize, it's not included in my brief, but Nevada Cement was a 2001 case that came up to this court on a petition for judicial review, where this court cited that as an appropriate standard. So that's a post-1999 case that came up on a petition for judicial review, and it's a sales and tax refund case.
That was how the taxpayer had initiated it, correct?
And that's how the taxpayer had initiated it.
And the proper or the appropriate statute wasn't challenged. It wasn't challenged whether it should be a 233B or under the other statute.
That's correct. And, I would, for instance, in the Sparks Nugget case, Southern California Edison has made a lot about the language in the court's decision on that. But the language in Southern Cal Edison, or in Sparks Nugget, really was just a recital of the procedural history of the case. That case, there were stipulated facts, and it came to the court on summary judgment motions. And so there were no factual findings to defer to on the part of the tax commission. And if you compare that to the Nevada Cement case, where the court affirmatively states that judicial review is a proper standard for a final decision of the tax commission, I think you'll find that Nevada Cement makes a stronger statement.
Counsel, as to the distinction between the 233B and the 372.680, do we not have some tension as to coming up under 372.680, this de novo review that they're calling for, when we look at we've had a full determination by an administrative agency, do we not have issues as to res judicata or collateral estoppel that we have to apply?
Absolutely. Or
is that not applicable?
Absolutely, Justice Douglas. That would be your Campbell case. And I have to say, Southern Cal Edison started off their argument saying that we're depriving someone of something, but we're not depriving anyone of due process or an adequate remedy. And in this case, it's a particularly good case where we've had 3,000 pages of administrative record. We've had hearing before an administrative law judge in 2003. We've had a hearing before the tax commission in 2005 that were overturned by this court for violation of the open meeting law. We had further hearings in 2008. There's been a lot of administrative procedure here that deserves deference. That this wasn't some it's not a meaningless preliminary. It's been hotly contested at every level. And now we have an amended complaint that's filed in this case that has 9 claims for relief and 51 factual allegations. And it flies in the face of administrative res judicata to think that after we've made the determinations, we've won the case, that we now have to start all over again in a full-blown trial de novo. It flies in the face of judicial economy and renders 233B meaningless.
Well, I was thinking that maybe administrative res judicata applies in a different way in this case, applying Campbell why isn't the commission bound by its previous pronouncement that the taxpayer would be reviewed under 372.680 instead of 233B? Why aren't you bound by that commitment to the taxpayer in this case?
Well, and that
isn't that what Campbell talks about?
Campbell does talk about that, although I would say that a statement, that was a statement in a brief in 2003 in this case, mm-hmm. is different than a letter from the department to the taxpayer. But the statement in the brief came in 2003, 7 years ago, in several administrative hearings and 3,000 pages of record ago. And so I think that once Southern California Edison took advantage, full advantage, of the administrative proceeding and had evidentiary hearings to the extent that they wanted, and a fully contested case, Campbell stands for the proposition you don't get a second evidentiary hearing. You don't get to then start over. Campbell says
administrative. That was not the commission's position that was conveyed to this taxpayer, was it? This taxpayer's impression from the statements by the commission and its historical position was that, notwithstanding the administrative hearing, they would be entitled to proceed to court on a de novo review. Isn't that the record?
That is one statement in a brief in 2003.
But it was also the policy of the commission generally, wasn't it?
I think that would be a strong statement to say that it was the policy of the commission or the department.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have the lawyers who represented the commission as to this taxpayer remained the same over the past 5-7 years?
No. But when I was thinking about that question today, I think there have been two, myself and one other.
Okay. Has your position changed since you've been involved in this case that 233B or 680 was the reviewing mechanism?
My position has not changed at all. When I came to this case, the first place I looked was 372.680. And as someone that has practiced administrative law my entire career, the words final decision in that statute have special meaning. Those are terms of art to me when they're applied to an administrative agency. And one term that is particularly clear to me is the term in 233B, that's the exclusive means of a judicial action or a judicial review concerning a decision by an administrative agency. And so since I have been in the position that I've had, I have ensured that my position and the positions of the colleagues that I work with that represent the Department of Taxation is consistent. And that's why we have more writs before you.
Okay. One other thing I was going to ask you to address, it certainly appears that the two statutes or the two mechanisms are in conflict. And if the court were to conclude that 233B is the appropriate mechanism, aren't we in effect writing 680 out of the law? We are directed to harmonize statutes. How do we maintain that position and still recognize 680 as having any effect at all?
Excellent question. And the answer to that question is that 372.680 does have the effect of extending the time for filing a petition. 233B requires that a petition be filed within 30 days. 372.680 extends that period of time for the taxpayer to 90 days. And so I think then when you harmonize the two, the word action harmonizes with the judicial review action. I think there's a distinction. The Mineral County case, and I realize that you dissented in that case, but in this case we have a legislative change. And in Mineral County, there was a decision by the court that the statutes had to be harmonized, and that if you go the way that Southern California Edison is arguing this case, actually 372.680 would preempt 233B. It would render it meaningless.
Does your position require us to abrogate in any way the Obexer or Safeway cases?
Justice Pickering, I think that that those cases have been abrogated by legislative changes.
By the change to 233B, but they've never changed the 372.680.
They have changed 372.680 in 1999. They did change.
Okay, and you say that change then abrogates those two older cases?
It's certainly, I think it does, particularly in light of Nevada Cement, which came after the changes. But the Safeway is an interesting case in that it was an action against the treasurer. And as Chief Justice Hardesty pointed out, the footnote 4 in that case says it would be a different matter if it was against an administrative agency as opposed to the treasurer. The Department of Taxation does not hold any money. They collect money. They distribute money. The treasurer holds the money. And so if there's an equitable action to be had, it would be against the treasurer's office. I hope that answers your question.
All right, colleagues, any other questions? Thank you.
If this clock is right, I have a race for a few answers to questions.
Well, we asked quite a few questions of both of you, so I'm going to give you 4 minutes.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. First of all, with respect to the questions about estoppel on matters litigated below, the point of a de novo right.
But let's talk about that. You've used the term de novo right. Where is that put forth in the statute? It says you have a right of action. It doesn't call for any kind of action. It just says action.
That's correct. The de novo language that describes this action as a de novo proceeding comes from this court in the Safeway decision. And it makes a clear distinction in that decision between the APA, which is a judicial review, and a de novo action for restitution.
But if we adopt, as Justice Hardesty's put forth, that Safeway is inapplicable to this situation, then where do we go?
Of course, I disagree that Safeway is inapplicable. I think it is eminently applicable. But if there was a desire on the part of this court in some fashion to reconsider Safeway and its comments there, I think the point remains that the additional language is that this is an action for restitution, for money held and received. And that is a classic judicial action which is brought before a trial court. And that's the remedy that the legislature has chosen to provide taxpayers in this situation. And that has not changed. That has not changed. The amendments that Ms. Sessions talks about do not change in any respect that remedy. And why should that be? She talks about a uniform policy. Why treat deficiency taxpayers differently? Well, one could argue about the fact that perhaps the legislature should bring these systems together. But the fact is, that's as this court said again in Safeway, that same argument was made. Why do we do this? The judicial economy was raised before this court. The answer was that is addressed to should be addressed to the legislature. And in fact, there is a reason. These taxpayers have paid voluntarily amounts of money that they now believe they are entitled to be refunded to them. They've not been the subject of deficiencies where the payment has been ordered to be made. That is a distinction. You may or may not believe it, but it is a distinction. The Nevada Cement case, which, again, we don't have in front of us, but I can assure you that it does not indicate a blessing by this court that in the case of a taxpayer with a refund claim, that that taxpayer must use 233B. That taxpayer did apparently, from the filing, decide to use that mechanism. It wasn't challenged by the department. It wasn't questioned by this court. The tree fell in the forest and nobody heard it. And there are other examples, but the fact that a taxpayer somewhere else, represented by someone else, has decided not to avail himself of a clear statutory right can't be used to deprive this taxpayer, who followed the advice and information in this proceeding from the commission and did exactly what the law requires. Sparks Nugget came up on a summary judgment. Think about that. That's not the language of a petition for judicial review. Summary judgment is a mechanism for an action before a trial court. And that's why Sparks Nugget didn't have apparently factual issues, so the parties handled it via summary judgment, not by a petition for review. Let me just finally say, in 2 seconds, if you're looking for indications of judicial intent, I refer you to the legislation just enacted in 2003, when three new taxes, excise taxes, were imposed by the legislature. What was the judicial remedy the legislature enacted in those three cases for taxpayers who paid that tax and then sought a refund? They grafted exactly the language of 680. Exactly. It's an action filed by the taxpayer against the department. Why in the world would the legislature adopt language that the department today contends is a nullity and has been a nullity since 1999? I mean, that seems to me to be the compelling evidence if you're looking for judicial intent. Thank you very much.
All right, any questions? Counsel, thank you for the briefs and the arguments today. This matter will stand submitted. We're going to stand in recess until the next call of court at 1 o'clock.
All rise.